Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
Freaking first cut. Golly.
Welcome to the First Cut Podcast. I'm Rick Gaiman, and this is your Palmetto Championship recap episode. And joining me to break it all down, that's Greg Ducharme. Greg, hey, buddy.
Hey, what's going on, Rick?
Not much. Yeah. That was, we were doing our first look for the U.S. Open a couple of hours ago, and I think I was a little bit stuck in the mud of how that tournament was going to play out. And while it might not have turned out perfectly for everyone, it was at least exciting at the end. I didn't know what was going to happen.
Right. That's the thing, is you felt like Hadley was going to win in spite of his play. You just kind of felt like there was no other, like he couldn't possibly give up this lead. And nobody really charged. Garrick Higgo shot 68. There were a couple of, but it just felt like he was too far back for the charge to really count. Bo Van Pelt kept making, hit some great shots, make a couple mistakes. When he got near the lead, he just felt like Hadley was going to fall into it. Yeah. And it was just too much for him. And all of a sudden, Garrick Higgo, who we talked about a little bit earlier in the week, he was an interesting guy in DFS and everything. But all of a sudden, he's your winner.
He led for 1 second of this event, but the most important 1 second, the right. Last one.
Right. You never thought he was the guy. Because it felt like normally when a number is posted in a PGA Tour event, it's rare that it's good to post.
Correct.
They talk about it. It gets talked about all the time. Like, oh, if you could post a number, you never know. But it doesn't really happen all that often.
Yeah.
Right. Post. You want to have holes on the PGA Tour. The guys that have holes to go, typically somebody figures out a way to get it done. And Garrick Higgo didn't have the holes. Bo Van Pelt had holes. And Harris English had holes, and Chesson Hadley had holes. And you figured one of them would be able to cross the finish line and get it done. But hey, he posted, and it everyone fell around him. It worked.
Posting a number is the biggest scam on the PGA Tour. Never works. Don't worry about posting. Just keep firing, going low.
Maybe a major. You might see that next week.
Yeah.
But really, it doesn't happen that often.
It really doesn't.
So usually it's some of the guys in the last couple of groups.
We do have Kyle Porter on the schedule for this evening. He is finishing up some writing obligations, probably be with us momentarily. So we will march on, Greg. And before we jump into the results, plenty to talk about, but let's talk about the course. This is kind of a weird situation for Congaree. It's a newer course. It's only 4 years old. It has this different type of vibe to it, and it's hosting a one-off event. So it's not like we're necessarily expecting to see it again anytime soon. But after what you saw this week, is this a place that, you know, as things open up, could we consider going back to this course?
Yeah, I think you could. I think the weather didn't do it justice the way we kind of expected. We didn't get a lot of what we expected on Sunday because of the rainstorm. And maybe that's a time of year issue, but we kind of expected the ball to be on the ground a little bit more, which it was running in the fairways. It was definitely moving in the fairways, but it wasn't really moving on the greens all that much. And it makes it, when a course is designed for the ball to be on the ground, you got to leave space. It's like Kapalua in Hawaii, although it's way more hilly. It's not a great comparison, but Kapalua is designed for the ball to roll down the hills. And if you need the width, you need an 80-yard wide fairway so you can hit it to the right half and it ends up in the left half. Or you can keep it in the fairway that way. And Congaree has a similar kind of design philosophy where you need that width in order to allow a shot to kind of hang in the fairway with all the roll. And when you lose some of that roll because of weather, it gets a little bit less interesting. You don't feel like there's a really challenging tee shot up ahead. You don't feel like it's really challenging to hit a green because the ball's holding a little bit. So all of a sudden, it looks like the scores weren't all that great today, but it looks like it's bad play more than, wow, this is a really tough test.
I think what I like is that if you're not in the fairway, you're at the mercy of anything that might happen to you. Right. It might be a nice, clean, sandy lie or hard pan with an angle, or you might be just absolutely cooked, no chance, wispy stuff. I like the randomness aspect of it. And I don't know how much that played into this fairly random leaderboard that we ended up getting, but I do like that you're kind of at the mercy of the course. And I can see someone just popped in on us here. That right there, that's Kyle Porter, KP. Welcome to the show.
What's up? I love what you guys are talking about right now. I'm just going to jump in because I was reading an article by Andy Johnson, who runs the Fried Egg, and he's big on course architecture. I'd love to just listen to him and Greg just, you know, chop it up about courses. But he was talking about how with a lot of U.S. Open courses, the rough is thick and it's long, but it's very predictable. And the unpredictability that you get at a place like Congaree is maybe more interesting. It's not necessarily harder, although it can be, but it allows more guys to have a chance, right? When it's thick and long and you know, Bryson's just trying to hit it as far as he can, you have the longest guys have a disproportionate advantage compared to a place like Congaree where they might get flyer-wise, they might get you know, and the shorter guys have an opportunity to catch up with them, where if you're hitting a 4-iron out of long rough at Torrey next week, you got no chance. I mean, you're not going to be able to do that. So I think it makes a place like Congaree, it just creates a more diverse leaderboard than maybe you get at the U.S. Open next weekend.
When you get to the U.S. Open next week, you'll see certain holes will have really long, like left of 12 will be really long. And you'll hear the line,
brutal.
This is the thickest rough on the whole property. This spot here, left of 12 or whatever. I'm just making up 12. But that tends to happen. And at a place like Congaree, Pinehurst, very similar, you don't really get that. So a miss to the left of a certain hole, they're not all created equal. Luck comes into play big time. And sometimes you can be completely fine. It can turn out to be an advantage. And sometimes, like DJ on 16, you can be completely in trouble and have to pitch out.
Which scenario do you like better? Because I think there's a real argument for saying, I don't want to bring luck into it. I'd rather have the graduated rough, right? And we didn't get that at Wingfoot last year. It was kind of all like, or it seemed like, as far as I remember, it was all one height. So I think the graduated rough makes it more fair, I guess. But I'm curious about which version you like better.
Greg, jump into that, because you're the one most well-equipped to answer that question, I want to throw this one at you as well, because what I understand, that graduated rough, which I think is a brilliant idea, is like an absolute nightmare to try to execute. And places don't want to try to do that. But in theory, I like the idea. But from what I understand, and maybe you can enlighten us, it is incredibly difficult to do correctly.
Right. You got to adjust. I mean, adjusting the height of a mower may not be that big of a challenge, but you got to measure. And these things aren't straight line. You're not mowing straight lines, right? You got to. There's a little bit.
It's like when you get a haircut and they have to blend it. Like you know, it's not just one buzzer and one next buzzer.
Right, and you got to go around with the contours of the holes, and then there's something. And it's, you know, what who on your staff is spending that time cutting the rough? You typically won't have your very best maintenance guy mowing the rough. It's typically an easier job. It's less important. There's more room for error. So, you know, that's another issue. But here's the thing with graduated rough and rough in general. When you have no spectators like at Winged Foot, it's very uniform, very fair throughout the entirety of the property. But when you add spectators, think back to the 2019 Farmers when Mark Leishman hits three fairways on Sunday and wins. He was missing fairways big. And it almost turns into the bigger you miss, the better off you are. You get penalized the most for missing the closest to the fairway. So the concept of graduated rough, I understand, but the penalty seems backwards in a way, which kind of bothers me. You don't get that at a place like Congaree or a place like Pinehurst. But there is, at the same time, that element of luck, which I'm not a huge fan of. It's just there's this one problem with rough where the bigger your miss is, the more of an advantage you actually can get, depending on how many trees there are. Brings in a whole different conversation, very important element of the conversation. But so I guess long and short of it is you're going to get luck to some degree no matter what when you're off the fairway. I would say I prefer more traditional rough where the miss left at 12 is really bad no matter what. You're not going to get that lucky break. Because the difference between pitching out and being completely fine is just such a wide, it's a really wide difference at a place like Congaree. So I guess I'd lean slightly to the rough.
This diverse leaderboard that Congaree produced, eventually the man at the top won Garrick Higo, who KP, I've got so many little nuggets, I don't even know where to start here. Let's go with this one. Wins in his second career PGA Tour start. And if you look at his results now worldwide, he's won three of his last five, if you include his two victories on the European Tour just a few weeks ago.
So I've got a Higo take, and shockingly, so I don't think he is he played well this week. I don't know that he's like a king. Like if you've read about him or kind of heard about him, it's not like he was this can't miss, you know, Justin Thomas type from South Africa. And just because he's from South Africa, we don't know anything about him. That wasn't his deal. He went to UNLV. He was okay there. His best finish his first year was like a fifth place at a tournament. You're like, okay, well, that's fine. And now he's winning PGA Tour events 3 years later. It's kind of crazy. And his numbers on Datagolf they're fine. They're not great. But here's the thing about him that I love, and this is where I think the way that we view golf melds with the way that Mark Illman views golf. God, I'm so glad he's not on here to talk about
it. I know. I was thinking about that.
Higo, this is Higo's 49th OWGR start, so his 49th event at an OWGR event. He's won seven of them. Mm-hmm. Now, that's across Challenge Tour, Africa, I think Sunshine, European, and now PGA Tour. But he just has this skill of winning, which I think is you and I probably underrate that, right? Because we look at strokes gained, all this different stuff. He just wins. I mean, it's like to win seven. I don't care what freaking tour you're on. If you're winning seven times and 49 starts, that's super impressive. So that's kind of my big takeaway from him winning this event.
It's a great skill to have, Greg, if the skill that you have is winning golf tournaments, and that's something he's done, as Kyle mentioned, prolifically.
Yeah, it is the only skill, you could argue, the only skill that's important, right? It kind of, the reason you want to be good off the tee is so that you can win. The reason you want to be good on the green is so that you can win. So it's like, what's the most important statistic in golf? Well, I always say it's scoring average. Right, but winning might be even more important than that. So it's a great thing to see. It's just this uncanny knack, which is kind of interesting. That's a lot. It's a
the
lot
most important winning. Stat on the PGA Tour is the official money list. That's the most important one.
Yeah. Well, maybe it's FedEx Cup points.
FedEx Cup points. Yeah. So a couple other good nuggets here. Obviously, this now two starts in, that was easy. Able to secure his spot on the PGA Tour through 2023. The last golfer to win. So he entered the final round trailing by 6 strokes. That's the largest comeback with 18 holes to play on the PGA Tour since Bubba Watson did it at the 2018 Travelers. And KP, we were talking about this, I think, before you went on, and maybe this was a benefit to Higo. He just kind of was there as everyone melted down around him. He was in the lead for one moment. It was the moment the golf tournament was over. I don't know if it was beneficial or if it would have been a different result if he was out front trying to hold on to this thing, but it just felt like he was the one pillar as everyone else collapsed.
Yeah, we were watching the last hour or whatever, and it was like, is this the final round of a tour event, or is it the first round of a, you know, Corn Ferry event? Like, everyone was playing terribly, right? Like, I felt so bad for Chesson Hadley because, you know, if I don't know, if DJ blows an event, you're like, whatever, he's going to win 10 more, doesn't matter. But Chesson Hadley blowing an event, like, when's your next shot? Is it in 5 years, 5 months? I don't know, you know? And so it was strange. I don't think that, I mean, it doesn't cheapen, he still won, but again, like and it kind of plays into what I'm talking about. This skill of like, you're the one that's up after 72 holes, not 70, not 75, but 72. And I think that is, maybe I'm giving too much credit there, but I don't know. He played the back nine great too. I mean, he was flawless over the back nine. Shot a 32, I think, on the back to win it. So it was some bad play all around, but great play from Higo to win it.
All right, we can do the Mark Immelman victory lap for him here. He was basically all in on Higo this week. Also, I think we've got to find, there it is. There's the, if you're watching on YouTube, as producer Jacob mentions, you know, some events you get to shake Jack's hand after winning it. But more importantly here, you get Mark Immelman on the scene, dapping up Garrick Higo on the range as he finds out he is victorious. A very cool moment here.
You hate to see an objective journalist just playing favorites here. It's just tough to watch.
You got to get that camera shine. I don't blame him for this.
No, I'm kidding. It's great. It's very cool. You know, I think it's interesting because a lot of the young South Africans, they know the Immelman brothers. They know Trevor. They know Mark. They've been around and I'm sure, you know, mentored and kind of cared, you know, taking those guys under their wing. I read an article on PGAtour.com by Ben Everill talking about, it was a quote from Trevor Immelman talking about how Higo reminded him personality-wise of Phil Mickelson. So I think that there's obviously a nice kinship there among the South Africans. I'm just glad Mark's not here to chirp about his low South African bet, which he made on Tuesday.
I'm sure by next to, you know, to this upcoming Tuesday, we will talk about this again. Don't you worry about that. But one final thing that we got to give props to Mark on here, Greg, is I don't know if you remember this. Before the season started, we played this little game. And one of the things that we did is we tried to pick a golfer who was currently at the time outside the top 100 in the world who would make a big move. I don't remember how we defined it into the top 25 is probably how we did it. I remember I picked Harold Varner III. That's not working out so great. Yeah. But Mark went with Garrick Higo, and 3 wins later, Higo is going to wake up Monday morning as the 39th ranked player in the world. And now full PGA Tour status. I mean, this is obviously, it goes without saying, a huge moment for his career.
It's such a risky play because he's not a PGA Tour member. I went with Taylor Gooch, who you know is going to have PGA Tour starts. He hasn't made a huge move, but you know he's going to have PGA Tour starts. So he has a really good chance of getting into some WGCs. He's got there's a really good avenue for him to make a big move. If he plays well, it's going to be on the PGA Tour. It's going to yield a lot of world golf ranking points. For Garrick Higo, the risk in that pick by Mark is the guy's going to end up on the PGA Tour. Basically, or he's going to have to win. And he has done both. So,
both of those things.
Yeah, extremely impressive and just extremely risky. So kudos to Mark on that one.
The man who entered the day with a 4-shot lead, his name is Chesson Hadley. He shot a 75 KP. It was low lighted by bogeys on 16, 17, and 18. This, to me, I described to Greg before we went hot, was a slow motion car wreck. It was it felt like it was coming. There wasn't enough time to stop, and it just was a matter of time before he bled all of these strokes back. He just never looked like he had it over the final stretch.
No, and his tee to green play was awful. I mean, I think he was, I don't know, last in the field in approach shots on Sunday, or second to last, something like that. I don't know what the final number was.
68th. He lost 4.6 shots approaching the green.
That's the worst. There was nobody worse.
That is, guys.
He hit four greens.
Well, and here and I kind of I didn't know that was going to happen. I wrote a little bit about how like this is why we talk about when guys are leading a field in putting on Saturday night and they're winning the tournament. It's different on Sunday where your swing has to hold up under real pressure. And if it's not, if it's kind of shaky throughout the tournament, that's a difficult proposition, right? Like that's the reason that we talk about stats the way that we do. It doesn't always, you know, play out like that. And I think this is like a rare instance in which it plays out exactly like that. It doesn't always go exactly the way that the stats are kind of saying that it's going to go, but it was brutal. I've got a quote here from Hadley where he says, it sucks, right? I can only imagine what it looked like on TV because it looked freaking awful from my view. I mean, I could barely keep it on the planet. That 8-iron from the fairway on the last hole was inexcusable, which it kind of was. I just didn't have it today. It was bad and I've got to do better and I will. Just got to keep after it. So I think it's hard because you get so close to winning. Like, there we go. We got the quote up there. Good job, Jacob. Producer Jacob. You get so close to winning at the end, even though, you know, if you flip the numbers around and this happens at the beginning of the fourth round or in the third round or something like that, it doesn't feel as bad, but you were right there and you just couldn't make a one par over the last. I mean, he was up three with three to go on Higo specifically, and he just needed one par and he couldn't get it.
I'm glad that you brought the perception versus reality thing into this, because the first part of that Hadley quote was, if I shot a 75 in the first round, then 65, 66, 68, I'd be tickled, which Greg, it's absolutely true. If you told him before the week he was going to finish T2, he would have been thrilled. He would have been doing cartwheels around his hotel, all that good stuff. It's just kind of the way that it shakes out. And yeah, I mean, it was tough to watch. You certainly don't wish this upon anyone. I mean, he looked, I mean, the putt, he backed off the putt on 18 and it just, I mean, he looked like he couldn't feel his body parts. It was just tough.
You look at, if you listen to basketball coaches and what they say going into games, they talk a lot about first 5 minutes. Coach K was big on this, first 5 minutes, last 5 minutes. And those are the moments in a game where, if you can dominate or play really well, play your best in the first 5 minutes and the last 5 minutes, it's a sign that you're ready to go. And when you struggle in those moments, you come out a little bit flat, you're maybe a little unprepared, unprepared for the moment, or, unprepared mentally in another way, it's a sign. And when you see this start of par, bogey, bogey on one of the easiest stretches of the course, and then bogey, bogey, bogey to finish, that's a sign of feeling the pressure. And so Chesson just was not ready. He was not comfortable. It was very clear all day. He wasn't comfortable. He wasn't ready. He wasn't ready to be leading a PGA Tour event by four. That being said, going forward, I actually think this could be kind of a good thing for him in a way. It was so bad. It's almost okay. It's not like there's one shot that sneaks in there and he doesn't know what's going to happen. He completely got away from what got him there. And there's a process that you go through that leads to results. And it looked to me like he's thinking about winning or not winning. Well, he's thinking about the result. I heard this great quote the other day that said, process over result equals dollar sign. Result over process equals zero. And that's like exactly what we saw from Chess and Hadley today. So I think that being said, it's kind of it's something you can work on. It's not an easy fix, but there's a very clear solution. The game isn't broken. He's just got to get a little more focused going into a final round, take on the challenge from a different perspective, and I think he'll be fine.
In his defense, I can blame this on Puerto Rico, at least a little bit, on the curse.
Here we go.
Yeah.
I mean, come on, a four-shot lead. What did everybody tweet out? If you have a four-shot lead on the PGA Tour, everybody wins these. Nobody ever loses these. Well, if you win the Puerto Rico Open in 2014,
can you define the Puerto Rico curse for me? Because
okay, so
like
at this point,
it's evolved.
Yeah, it's evolved a little bit. But at this point, what is still remaining is, and you have to be very careful about the way you say this, no winner of the Puerto Rico Open has ever won another event that has been played inside the United States. So
after winning in Puerto Rico.
Correct. So the caveat was I always want to say Michael Thompson. That's not correct. Michael Bradley. That's also not correct.
No, it is. That
Michael
is
Bradley.
Correct. He was a soccer player, but also the golfer.
He won the Puerto Rico Open again afterwards.
Yeah.
So you have to specify it's not another event. And then of course, Victor Hovland won, but he did it at Mayakoba, which is not in the United States.
I see your line there. So you're still hanging on.
Continental United States. Puerto Rico is still in the United States. So you get to say continental.
There you go.
Yeah. All right. Great point.
So that means Finau's going to win like three tournaments in Hawaii.
Well, yeah. what I was hoping, yes, yeah, exactly. So what I was hoping is that I could argue the Puerto Rico Open was so strong that Hovland had to kind of chop its legs out, and then Hadley was able to kind of chop the head off, and then Finau winning next week would have been the pure sign that it is over and done with, and then we could have so just put it to bed.
It's still lingering. The curse is still lingering.
Unfortunately, it appears so.
But I think to what Kyle was saying earlier about his swing being a little shaky through the week and showing up on Sunday, listening to him talk about it before the round and listen and watching him walk and move and swing, it was almost like he knew he didn't have it. It was like he knew he wasn't going to win before he even went out there. It was such a different interview he gave than any of the other interviews during the week. Everything changed for him going into today. So I think that's because he kind of knew in a way that his game wasn't really ready and his mind wasn't ready to overcome that. So
I think sometimes pros, not that they're not, I mean, obviously they're trying to win. I think sometimes they feel guilty or like, remember the way that Phil talked about his 06 US Open at Wingfoot when he was like, well, I didn't really, like, basically I didn't deserve to win. I think there's this weird subconscious thing where they know they're not really flushing it and they're kind of just getting by. Like, I think it's weird to watch pro, like what you're saying, it's weird to watch pros do that or talk like that or sound like that in interviews that they give or kind of the way they talk about their tournament. And I think that's probably what we saw from Hadley this week.
I've got a couple more guys I want to get through here. Bo Van Pelt. So this was a surprise. T2 for Bo Van Pelt, 66, 68.
It's unbelievable.
On the weekend. Let me try to illustrate this here, KP. So this is from Will Gray, now with NBC. So he says, Bo Van Pelt is playing off a one-time top 50 career money list exemption. So you can enact that one time. He did it during 2016. He played three times, tore his labrum, and then did not play for 3 years. So that exemption carried over to the 2019-2020 season. And of course, because of the pandemic and the 91 days that the PGA Tour shut down, no one from the 2019-2020 season lost their status. So that's what he's playing on right now. Obviously, needs great results to find a way to continue to keep his PGA Tour card. Finishes in a tie for second here, essentially out of nowhere.
He was 500-1. I mean, he was more than double what Phil was to win the PGA. Think about how crazy that
he almost won this.
Like he needed to take three strokes from 195 yards on the 72nd hole to get into a playoff, and he took four. Right, he was 195 out. He needed to not get up and down. He just needed to take three strokes, and he hit just a horrible bunker shot after his approach landed short. He was awesome. I mean, he hit the ball really well. I got a great quote from him too. I found it after the round. He said, so he had this weird thing over the last 5 years where he had multiple shoulder surgeries, but then, and they mentioned this on the broadcast, he had a rib taken out to kind of alleviate. Yeah. I don't know how that works. His doctor called it a unicorn event or a unicorn injury or something like that. So he had this great quote that was actually reminiscent of what Phil said after the PGA. This is Bo Van Pelt. He says, "You've just got to work at it. Like, I worked my ass off for my whole life just to get out here. And I just needed to work a little harder. I think I didn't appreciate how hard it was going to be. When you don't do anything competitively for 3 years, like stuff that we did, that we just did naturally because I did it every day, I had to start over. I thought it would kind of take back up and be where I was, and I wasn't going to be that way. It was just hard work." And I thought that was really, he's 46. He doesn't have to grind. He's made a ton of money. I mean, his top 50 money exemption was how he got, was essentially right. why he was in this tournament. So, yeah, sure. I thought it was really cool. He's a good dude. I've gotten to know him a little bit just through Oklahoma State stuff. And he's just somebody like Charles Howe that just loves golf. And he's obviously very good at it. And so it's cool to see him playing well again.
I'm just scrolling through his OWGR page here, Greg. And by my count, since 2016, so that's 5 years ago, he's played a total of 40 events. He's missed the cut in 28 of them. He doesn't have any top tens. This is a true. I like KP's take. Like, he doesn't have to grind here. He's in the top 50 of the money list, but the fact that he is, it's kind of cool.
I completely agree. We look at what the PGA Tour player does effort-wise based on dollars that they've earned, as if everyone who goes to the PGA Tour goes there because they have to. But the truth is, nobody has to go play on the PGA Tour. You don't have to at any point. You could be a teaching pro, do what we do, get into the meet. There are so many things you can do in the game of golf, but you love to play. So you do everything you can to make that happen. And it's risky and it's expensive, and there are a lot of reasons why you shouldn't try to play professional golf. But the guys that can, they really relish the opportunity and they appreciate it. And I think that's what you're hearing from Bo Van Pelt when you listen to that quote that Kyle read. Like, I'm not working at this because I have to put food on the table. I'm working at this because I love the game. So it is great to see him back playing well. He's got a great swing, and I enjoy watching him. And again, I kind of felt like he really could have won this thing. Every time he sniffed the lead, you could tell he got a little uncomfortable too. Seems to be the theme of this tournament.
He was not alone.
Right. Yeah. He's not alone. you make eagle, and then all of a sudden it goes, your tee shot on 13 goes immediately into the trees. You make bogey there. You get yourself, you're at 11 under, and you're right there with it again, a chance to, you're just getting closer to the lead with what Chesson's doing, and you completely block yourself out and then leave your pitch shot, leave an impossible pitch over the bunker at 16. It was just kind of like disappointing the way you're there and you should win, and then no, you don't. And again, it's just that moment, those moments down the stretch when you haven't played in 3 years, you haven't contended in 5 years or more. It's uncomfortable. It's a lot of pressure. It means a lot. And so it's hard. And you know, I'll be interested to see if this kind of play continues for him.
Greg, you make it sound like anybody can do what we do.
If you have the, if you know the game of golf, Bo Van Pelt isn't anybody, right? These guys are, they're real golf fanatics.
I think Bo Van Pelt has a podcast, by the way, so he actually does do what we do.
Oh, he does.
I think
so. He's doing both. Okay.
Yeah, we should.
What are we doing? What are we doing?
Yeah, that's the better question. Producer Jacob might need to look that up for me. I'm pretty sure he has a podcast because. He does a podcast with somebody else.
It's called, I don't know how old this is, so don't quote me on this, but it's called Both Sides of the Ball. PGA Tour veteran Bo Van Pelt and golf writer Farrell Evans tee up thoughtful conversations about golf culture and everything between on their podcast.
Last episode, May 28th. So active rival. Thanks for promoting on the show.
Oh, sorry.
Well, I was trying, listen, we were trying to schedule something for me to go on there. So I'm trying to cross promote here. I'm trying to get us into every market possible.
Now I'm in a,
I like it.
Rabbit hole. Okay. Quickly here, gentlemen, Dustin Johnson. No. I don't know what I watched this week. We handed him the tournament on Friday evening because he opened up 65-68, even with a double on Friday on 18. He had to finish his third round on this morning, Sunday morning, in which he bogeyed the hole he played this morning, 18. And then after all that, as he got to like 12 and 13 on Sunday, I thought he might win the golf tournament. He was 10 under. He was one shot off the lead. He was charging. He makes triple on 16. KP, what did you see?
I'm somehow both more and less convinced that he's going to win in the U.S. Open than I was a week ago. I don't know. I don't know what I saw. I mean, the triple was like, what? First of all, whenever he got to within one, I was looking around, and there's not, I mean, we're grinding over this stuff. There's not a ton of like golf Twitter and different people watching. And I was kind of like, how does he have a chance to win the tournament? Like after he bogeys one, you're like, oh, he's, you know, I joked on HQ. I was like, he might withdraw and just head out to Torrey.
That's a good take.
And then he's within one after 12 holes. It was, I don't know. I guess I'm encouraged, but only moderately so going into the U.S. Open. He's not been very consistently good so far this year. And while the result and the numbers were better, it's not the type of result that you're like, oh, I'm feeling him winning Torrey Pines, even though he very well might do that.
What'd you see, Greg?
Oh, man. I'm just, I'm definitely more optimistic than I was at the beginning of the week. There's no question about that. But Dustin Johnson, you got to feel like he should have won this tournament from the beginning. Like from Thursday, Wednesday, last Sunday, whenever we talked about this first, to about an hour ago, Dustin Johnson, maybe an hour and a half or 2 hours ago, Dustin Johnson should have won this tournament. Like at every step of the way, this was his to win. You have everybody melting around and you're playing great. But anyway, all that happened this week is he made two big numbers that kept him away from winning. He made a double on Friday on 18 and he made a triple today on 16. And if he doesn't do that, he wins. But going into U.S. Open, I'm still worried about his putting, specifically the short putts. We saw him miss one on 16. I saw him miss one earlier in the week as well. But he's having the worst putting career, putting year basically of his career since at least 2013. He is the two big stats I look at in putting, strokes gained putting, he's 106. Hasn't been that bad since 2013 or it's either 2013 or 2011. And in three putt avoidance, he's 154th. So in strokes game, that's what it is. It hasn't been that bad strokes game putting since 2013. It hasn't been that bad three putt avoidance since 2011. And when you hit it the way he does, which is not great for him, but still great, You win if you putt well. And he hasn't putted well at all this year. And I really worry about those short putts on the greens at Torrey.
Thankfully, a three putt at a U.S. Open has never affected his career.
Right. Yeah. No effect for him.
He had a putt on Saturday, Greg, from like 4 feet. And it honestly might have been the worst putt I've ever seen from a top 10 player.
Was that a birdie putt? Was that on like 12 or somewhere early back nine?
Yeah, and
he had like a sand wedge in.
It did not get within it honestly, I don't know if it was within 8 inches of the hole from like 3.5-4 feet. It was.
They showed like, the worm cam, right? The incoming worm cam.
Yeah,
it was so bad.
It was unbelievable. I couldn't believe how far. Like it didn't even come close to touching the hole. And
it started offline. It was awful.
Yeah. So I don't know. I mean. It's hard because he's in this, and we're going to talk about the U.S. Open a ton, but he's in that category of eight guys. If the rough is up and it's super long, you're like, these are the only eight guys that can win this tournament. It's been DJ, Brooks, Gary Woodland, and Bryson over the last 5 years. So, that's the category of guy, and he's in it, and yet you don't really go to Torrey with a ton of confidence about the way he's playing. So I don't know. I have very mixed feelings about him going into the U.S. Open.
Do you think he can flip a switch, Rick? Do you think he can kind of do a, like what Brooks
does? Yes, but be careful because sometimes he flips it off. He flips it in both directions. So
yeah.
he for whatever reason goes out, shoots 80, 80, 70, 78. For whatever reason, he'll fall apart on a back nine, but he also then backs it up with I think he is one of these guys that flips it in both directions.
Right. So that's a little concerning.
Yeah. I have to move us along, but talking about who should have won this tournament, you know who should have won this tournament was Tyrrell Hatton.
Yes. Thank you.
You're welcome. If he loses just two strokes putting this week, he wins. Instead, he lost 3.2. Sorry, Hatton. We'll get to that in a second. We'll get to it right now.
Oh, no.
Hold on real quick.
Here we go.
Our betting cards, first of all, Mark was the winner. He was all in on South Africans. He was all in on Higo. Mark won. He had him as low South African. He had him in a matchup. Surprisingly, I don't think he bet him to win, but Mark won our betting contest for this week. That should be no surprise. One and done update. I'm going to try to start at the bottom here. Coach started the week at 2.5 million. He remains there because he took Keith Mitchell and it got him $0. I feel bad for Coach at this point. Like I also got $0, but I just feel bad for Coach at this point. Jacob, 3.7 million is where he started the week. He went with Lucas Glover, the ambassador at Congaree, feeling all the good vibes. Missed the cut, $0. Producer Jacob still at 3.7 million. That leaves us with Greg. We'll go to you. You started the week at, I can't do math, 6.7-ish. You got 56,000 from Ian Poulter, who played well for the first couple of rounds, was hanging around, finished T25.
Yeah, I'd rather have a tied second. But, you know, it's another good week for Ian Poulter. He's playing really well, playing nice golf. I'm happy with the pick. I just wish it went a little better for him over the weekend.
I also had Lucas Glover. I stayed 8.2 million. Mark took Brooks Koepka, burned Koepka for $0. He stays at 7.9, which leaves you, Kyle Porter, as the big winner of the week. You moved to 7.3 million. You are now within striking distance of both myself and Mark, and you are creating ground between yourself and Greg. And the only consolation that the rest of us get is that it wasn't a solo runner-up. It was a T2 four and a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 way tie. 411,000.
Yeah, I think he got less than. I mean, I've had guys finish like seventh and get more money than Haddon got. But yeah, I mean, it was frustrating because he was. I think he finished. Did he finish first from tee to green? I think he did.
I think he had
to off, right?
Yeah, he finished first. No, he finished first right ahead of Hudson Swafford.
Oh, correct.
Yeah, first.
By like so, those got like a pretty significant margin over like the rest of the field.
And he kind of started making. Pro. Yeah, he. I don't know. Real quick on Mark taking Brooks. Brooks is impossible to take. Like, where are you going to take him? You're going to take him at the. I mean, Rick and I are about to have to labor over this next week because you can't take him at a major because you can't trust him. You can't take him at a major because there's so many other guys that you trust more. But a major is the only place you should take him because he does stuff like this where he misses a cut because he can't putt or he doesn't want to putt. I don't
know. He looked so. He was sitting on every tee box on every tee. Like, I know it was hot and swampy in South Carolina and they had to wait a lot. He was, every time I looked at PGA Tour Live, he was sitting on a tee marker. It was driving me crazy.
But the top of this board is getting pretty interesting between us three and Mark. We're all within what, 1.5?
I think? Yeah, next week will be like 2 million to the winner. So,
yeah. So it's
things could change.
Yeah, things are moving quickly for Rick at the top.
I've whiffed like 8 weeks in a row, and also I have been saving. Here are the two names I've been saving for next week: Bryson and Brooks. Aren't I thrilled about that?
Like, me too.
What am I gonna do? This is craziness.
Let's talk about
this.
Next
is
week.
Your prevent defense.
Before we do, I got to take an ad break first. But before we do, two different guys got their tour card today, which I think is pretty cool. We talked about the first one, that is, of course, the winner, Garrick Higo. But Mito Pereira got the Battlefield promotion on the Corn Ferry. He won this for the third time this year, and I think back-to-back weeks. I think he won last week or the week before too. So that to me is when you can win three times in the year on the Corn Ferry, get the Battlefield promotion.
Battlefield.
That's impressive stuff.
Can we get Zalatoris a card yet?
It's unbelievable. Don't do this to me.
He's ranked like 20th in the world.
Everybody's got a card but this kid.
Yeah.
It's hard to imagine if you're like if you're designing the method to get on tour, right, considering world golf rankings and everything. It's hard to imagine that there's a path to do what Zalatoris did, to not have a card and be ranked where he's
well,
ranked.
And it's
amazing.
It's a perfect storm because normally, I mean, his jumping off point was the US Open, which happened at the beginning of the season instead of where it would normally happen, which is at the end. And so if you jumped off theoretically of the US, if you qualified and then that was your jumping off point, you'd be like, okay, whatever. We've got a month or two until the end of the season and he gets up there anyway. But it's really a perfect
storm. But he also
would
have gotten it through the Corn Ferry Tour. Like he won the Corn Ferry Tour last year. But there was no
nobody
moves on.
Yeah, exactly.
It's crazy.
All right, gentlemen, we are officially going to say goodbye to the Palmetto Championship. We are going to usher in U.S. Open Week with a quick little first look. But first, we're going to take a quick break and hear a word from our partners.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
And we're back. Just like that, I've declared it U.S. Open Week. We are now open for business. Torrey Pines is the spotlight. And gentlemen, oh boy, this board at the top. Greg, you, Sia, and myself did a little bit of a first look earlier to kind of talk about the course and maybe a little bit of the pricing. So let me start with you, Kyle, because I don't know what to do here. We've got a ton of huge names at the top. John Rahm, now out of COVID protocol, is your favorite at William Hill. He's 11-1. Dustin Johnson is 14. Bryson DeChambeau and Brooks Koepka are both 16-1, and Jordan Spieth is 18-1. It seems like there are simultaneously questions about all of the top players, but they've all played well enough recently to at least make you want to nibble on them.
Nibble on them. That's a funny way to put it. I'm so pumped. I love major weeks. I don't think anybody loves major weeks the way that I do. I am so excited for the U.S. Open. I'm excited to get out there. I've never been to Torrey. Bryson's going to win probably by five, just like he was going to win the Masters by five.
You've never been to Torrey?
No. Never been.
God, you are in for it, dude. It is so good.
I've never been to San Diego. I'm so excited just to get out there. I'm pumped.
I'm about to drive and just meet you there and just hang outside on the street. I'll just look in from it's amazing.
So I can't wait. I love the U.S. Open. I think it's going to be such a blast. I think there's so many. I was doing storylines earlier. We're going to post it on CBSSports.com on Monday. There's so many really fascinating storylines. I mean, we don't need it. We'll go through them all at the beginning of next week. If you looking at the board, I think Bryson, of the guys you mentioned at the top there, is the only value. I don't like Spieth here. DJ, I don't know what to do with him. Rahm is I think Rahm is value. I wouldn't like him at 7 or 8 or 9. I think when you get to the 11, 12, 14 range for him, I think that's, I'd like him at 12 or 14 better than 11. But Rahm and Bryson are the only two guys there that I think have a lot of value.
We argued if you can get Rory McIlroy's name with a 2 in front of it, or his odds with a 2 in front of it, Greg, you should bet it. He's 20-1. That's what he is at William Hill, along with Xander Schauffele, and then Colin Morikawa and Justin Thomas are both 22-1. Which JT, I think JT's fascinating. I don't necessarily mean that in a good way, Greg. I mean, we know when he misses big. He hasn't played as great as his standards would normally call for recently. But is he the guy at 22 that's just like the incredible value?
No, I don't think so. I just
fair
watching
enough.
Him play the last time he played. Now, look, it's very possible, maybe even probable, that he's gotten these things figured out. But what I saw out of JT in his last outing, I can't even think of where this was. It was after PGA.
Memorial?
I don't remember where he played.
He played the Memorial.
Memorial. I mean, he was blading wedge shots. Like the iron play, the wedge play, the typical, it was so unlike JT. It was really bad. But that attached to the inconsistent form going in, it's hard for me to write that off as a one-off and say, okay, that was just a bad week. It's almost like it's gotten progressively worse, and that was a low point. So is he going to come back and all of a sudden win the U.S. Open? I mean, I would like him if I didn't see what I saw at Memorial. Think his game fits, but I have real questions. Cantlay is more valuable to me coming off of a win. He's from San Diego. The really interesting thing about the top of the board is these guys don't really, aside from Rahm, they haven't really played here a lot recently in a very strange way. And if they have, they haven't really played well. Xander came and tied second in his last time, but he's only made the cut here at the Farmers twice. It's
out of
very
like
peculiar.
7 tries.
Right.
He's been so, miserable.
Right. It's bizarre. There. Rory is probably the guy with the best, aside from Rahm, the best history here.
He just started playing it
16
recently, and he's played well. I think it's like last 3 years right. He's played it well. Yeah.
I feel like people are gonna do this thing with Rahm where everybody's on him. It just seems so obvious, right? Oh, yeah, US Open, good to be Rom, true. San Diego, tour, all the coming out of COVID. Like he's hot, all like everything is pointing directly toward him. And usually it doesn't go like that, right? Maybe it will this week. I don't know, but it just it seems almost too obvious of a pick. And maybe that's a maybe I'm the idiot. Maybe I'm dumb for proposing that, but I don't know. It just doesn't it seems too straightforward.
This is what I said on our preview, Kyle. I was like the one thing that makes you question John Rahm is it's just too good to be true. And and sometimes players know that too. All the reasons why we think he should win, he thinks he should win. Probably even his feelings are probably even stronger in that regard, that he should go out there and win this event. So that's a lot of extra pressure for a player. There's a big difference between saying, all right, I have a chance to win and I should win. And it's a really big difference. And it can go one of two ways. So we'll see.
I think Brooks is super interesting. He's been so, so good at US Opens. I mean, I looked back at the last 10 years and of all the guys that have played in at least three, I think he's got the second best top 10 percentage. So
he has 14 top 10s in 28 majors of all majors. It's half. And 11 of them are top fives.
And they're like real top 10s.
Yeah.
They're from out in front. They're not, hey, I went into Sunday T22 and finished ninth.
I interrupted though. You were talking about Xander.
Well, so Xander's 4 for 4 in the US Open in terms of top tens, which is crazy.
So
and Brooks is 4 for 7. But if Brooks wins, that's 3 in 5 years, and he would tie Tiger and Hale Irwin with 3 US Opens. Since World War II, only Nicholas and Hogan have more than that. So we're talking about, I mean, I think sometimes we talk about, oh, Brooks and Bryson and Brooks and Michelob, you know, all these different things. It's like, how about Brooks and Nicholas, Hogan, Tiger, and Hale Irwin? How about that group?
We
talk about that, but we can't. He doesn't let us.
That's true.
We are an Arnold Palmer spiked family here. There are no other alcoholic beverages, unless they own each other, because that's usually how this works, is like one company owns everything. So maybe we're Michelob Ultra family too. It's hard to tell.
Producer Jacob is going to have to be reassigned to a different podcast.
All the plugs. Okay, you only get one storyline this week, KP. This is the only one you can talk about, the only one you can write about. Let me give you a couple options. Phil's quest for the career Grand Slam. Rom out of COVID, Brooks v. Bryson, the rough at Torrey Pines. Those are your four options. You only get one.
Like for the whole, like from Monday to Sunday, that's all I can
write. Yeah, so you should probably take one that, like, not Phil, because if he misses the cut, can't write anything on the weekend.
I would probably go Brooks and Bryson because it's the most, I don't want to do rough all week, even though that's the only one that's for sure you can do all week.
Yeah.
And that's the one where there's so many different angles to it. It could be Bryson back to back, it could be Brooks 3 out of 5 years. It could be Brooks and Bryson together, which would be just an unbelievable. Like I was thinking about what are the storylines that could top the first two majors that we've had this year, which has been Hideki with this just extraordinarily monumental win at the Masters, and then Phil with this improbable win at Kiowa. Really, a Brooks and Bryson finale would be one of the very, very few things that could top both of those, no matter who ended up winning. So, man, I think that would just, if we got that, that would, it's too much to ask for, but it would, I mean, they're two of the guys that I think are in that group. If you're saying there's only 8 guys that can win it, they're two of them. So it'd be pretty sweet.
My goodness. We are in for it, Greg. I'm on record by saying, and KP, I can't wait for you to get out. When do you get out there?
Tuesday.
Okay.
Tuesday morning.
I'm on record, Greg, as saying if you put a landfill on the plot of land that Torrey Pines is on, it would be beautiful. Like it doesn't matter. The fact that there happens to be an iconic major championship course on that plot of land, like it's just chef's kiss.
Yeah, it's amazing. It really, the scenics are beautiful. And from what I've heard, not only from you, Rick, but from others who have been there, that the TV just doesn't even do it justice.
It does not.
So I think you're in for a treat, KP. And by the way, I think the rough special that you could write, I mean, you could talk, it could get really interesting. You talk about the rough left of one, the rough right of one on Tuesday, rough behind one green. You could go really deep and say on Wednesday, the rough's still growing. They're going to graduate it. You know, there's a lot there.
You could be the rough guy. And if there's a Reed controversy again, we would have to go to you because you're the guy who just wrote about rough left of 10, like you're that guy now.
I hope there's a Reed controversy again. We might lose Brian Harmon in the rough.
I have a question for Kyle. Are you concerned you're not going to get there Monday to be the first person to drop a video of dropping a ball in the rough like someone always does on Monday of
US? He's already late. That's now happened Thursday of Congaree week.
Well, Xander did it, didn't he?
Yeah. He created the content himself. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
These guys with the pip are taking our job.
Yeah, seriously. Now I'm pumped. It's going to be an awesome week. I know I mentioned the winners, but the last five U.S. Opens, ever since Keimer ran away at Pinehurst, that one wasn't that interesting. But DJ, Brooks, Woodland at Pebble was cool, and then Bryson at Wingfoot. I mean, they've been awesome. Like they've been really. Just fascinating.
You didn't even mention Chambers Bay.
Oh, I forgot. Spieth at Chambers Bay. I was thinking that was
thrilling.
Yeah. Spieth doesn't have a chance here, does he, Greg?
I would never say he has no chance because he does things like coming third at the PGA when he's got no form. He knows how to score, but...
It's a similar course, right? It's not a similar course, but in terms of the way it could be set up, Bethpage and Torrey, I think you could kind of compare similarly.
You can look at them and say, all right, there's 10 guys who can win here. You were saying eight. It could be that number. It could be 10, 15. There's a limit because it's so big, just like Bethpage Black.
And Spieth doesn't seem like he should be one of them. And then he finishes third. And you're like, I don't understand.
Right. And he's had no form then. None. Zero.
I'm gonna talk myself into this by Wednesday.
No, I wouldn't give him no chance. Is all I'm saying. But I don't give him a very good chance. I don't like. He's not a guy that I like. I feel like he's kind of not great. Not feeling great about his swing right now. I don't know.
The problem with my anti-Rom thing right now, like it's too obvious. I don't like anybody else. I don't really like Rory. I don't. Love DJ. I'm kind of out on JT winning this week. Cantlay just won. Morikawa, I don't know if he's long. I mean, I don't know what to do.
Xander doesn't win a lot. Going on and on.
Everything's pointing at Rom. I guess Bryson. You could argue Bryson, but I don't know. It's going to be really, really intriguing. I'm pumped for it.
Last 6 years, minimum 50 rounds, best putter on POA. Any guesses? Because this guy's going to probably win it.
Say it again.
Last 6 years, since the start of 2015, minimum of 50 rounds, best putter on POA.
Jordan Spieth.
It's not a bad guess, but no, this guy has won at this golf course before.
John P. Reed?
Patrick Reed.
Oh.
Hey,
it's a short game. It's been, if you look at the Farmers, I can't wait to get into this because this is it's a short game course. It's a short game course, but will it be for the U.S. Open? I don't know. We only have one sample size. It's just going to be great. I can't wait to talk about how it's only the long hitters and that it's Spieth, Reed dueling it out.
Seriously. But the board from 08 is weird too. Like it's got a bunch of, it's kind of like the Kiowa board where you're like, I don't understand what the through line is on some of these guys, you know? So we'll get into it all next week.
Eagle and stuff.
Last thing, they're definitely gonna put the Sunday pin in the Tiger spot, right? Like 100%.
Okay. Yeah.
As long as they don't put it in the Kyle Stanley spot.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
What is wrong with you? That was a homicide. My word.
Every like 5 months, Greg just like destroys someone or something.
I did not see that coming.
Yeah.
He also has this thing with Kyle Stanley too. Yeah, he's remembered every shot Kyle Stanley has hit like in his entire career.
It's been amazing. He's got an amazing career.
All right. I think you should write about it,
Kyle. That might be your U.S. Open.
Don't put this on me.
That'll do it for our recap episode for this week's Palmetto Championship. It is now U.S. Open week. We've made it. Let me thank producer Jacob. He does all the hard work behind the scenes. That right there. That's Greg Ducharme, who you can find on Twitter at @TheRealGFD. That's Kyle Porter, who will be on site at Torrey Pines, the South Course. Oh, gives me goosebumps. You can follow him on Twitter at @KylePorterCBS. You can find me at @RickRunGood. This has been The First Cut, and we'll catch you next time.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast wherever you get your podcasts.